This is something I make fun of Alec for all the time because your phone has been busted up since like 2008. Because you have
an iPhone. It's fine. It works fine.
Wait, do you really?
I talk to you all the time on it. I have an iPhone. I think it's like a. It might be a 10, an X.
Was Osama bin Laden alive when you bought your phone?
I didn't buy it from him, but I mean, he could have had it. Yes.
Well,
but
it's actually placing it in time. It's actually foolish for you to say that because Osama bin Laden's been dead since the 1990s, and the person that's been running, the person behind 9/11 was
Zohran Mamdani.
Yeah. He's still alive.
He's still alive. Zohran Mamdani, that cave. That is. Okay, the other conspiracy is that the Saddam Hussein silhouette is in fact an Osama, therefore Zohran Mamdani silhouette.
There you go.
Wait.
So
you're saying Saddam
Sorry, blowing your mind.
Saddam is Zohran?
I'm saying the silhouette believed erroneously to be Saddam Hussein.
The silhouette famously where he's in the spider hole, yes? This is where he's crawled in that.
Lying down, looking like half of Illinois, right?
Well, this is the first time hearing about this.
Well, no, not if he's in, you have really not a lot of vertical, like,
no, you really can't.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, although, you know, I'm not going to speak for his, equipment.
You could bore a hole.
Could you?
And just go like,
could
me?
You?
You don't need that much room.
Yeah, bro.
Connor,
I could totally
when
do
you
that.
Inevitably slide backwards ass up into a tiny little cave hole.
And it has
will
to be
you gone. Bore a hole that you can fuck?
If I tried to go through a tunnel system like Saddam Hussein, they'd be like, we found him because he ate too much honey halfway through this. And I'd be thinking,
I'm stuck.
He took his pants off. He didn't have to.
Oh, rabbit.
Is that
a good Winnie the Pooh? I haven't seen it in a bit.
Bother.
It's more.
Bother.
Oh, bother. He's a little distinguished.
Y'all should know better than me. We're talking about, I mean, Winnie the Pooh is, let's face it, it's for babies. It's kids shit.
I watched not too long ago with my
millions of Disney adults would disagree with you.
And we're going to be talking about some baby stuff. Oh, God. We'll get to Disney adults. We'll get to Disney adults. But first off, hello, listeners. Welcome to another episode of Propagandos. It's your host, Connor, as always, with Alec. And we're joined today by our friend, Maria. Maria, welcome to the show.
Hi.
And we're going to be talking about kids shit. We're talking about kids content, kids programming, and the propaganda within. I don't have a kid, so I don't really have a dog in this race. But
or a kid.
Do what?
You don't have a dog in this race. Or a kid.
Or
in
a
this
kid.
Race.
Yeah. I don't have a kid in this
water
race.
Water tastes horrible. It's just so bad.
The water in the milk jar?
I'm just going to keep drinking it. I'm really thirsty. I'm not going to stop.
Do you not
the
have
water purifier is going out, and it tastes bad.
Oh, that Lake Charles decomp.
I know. There's fucking hydrogen sulfide or something in it.
You
it's
look
got
out.
A nice terroir.
Ooh.
What in the fuck word is that? That ain't a word we use around here. So I watch a fair amount of children's programming. We're mostly stuck on Bluey because my kid's like two, right? And Bluey on repeat seems fine. And Bluey's like fairly innocuous and like unoffensive to the point where it's fine, right? So
for yourself, I hate Australians.
I mean,
kidding, L. If you're listening, I'm just kidding. We actually have a lot of listeners in Australia. So,
Connor, she's from New Zealand.
I thought they were Kiwis. I was gonna say that. I was like,
no, she's Australian.
Now they're gonna come for me. Now that's
good. Kiwis,
my full name.
That's all that. You're not allowed to say that.
It's a slur.
It's a slur. It's a slur. Actually.
Hi.
Oh man.
Excited.
All right. Well, you know, I've watched a fair share amount. A fair amount of Bluey just from babysitting your kid, Maria.
Yeah, you've shown him more Bluey than I have. I haven't shown him any, really, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I was going to see if all of us could sing the theme song together, but you might
not
know
I think I can still sing the theme song.
It's like...
Mom!
Mom!
Dad!
Stop.
Bingo!
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 Hooray!
My favorite word that they ever utter in a Bluey episode. Have you seen Traffic Cairn? Traffic Cairn.
Traffic Cairn.
Oh, that's the one where mom is just like staring out the window and tells Bingo to dress up as a traffic cone and go run around the streets.
Just walk into, walk into the road, why don't you?
She's just like taking pills and drinking wine. Like, let's play traffic cones, kids.
Let's play
take
traffic
a long
cone.
Walk off a short pier. Jesus.
We can finally do an accent that we don't have to cut on the show. This is amazing.
It's not racist.
It's not racist to do it.
It's Australia.
It's not racist. They're mostly white.
What's the charge? Having an accent? A succulent Chinese accent?
No.
The Bluey ones, they're dogs, but they're white dogs.
That's getting into South African. They're white dogs. So it's called Bluey. Yes. And there's a lot of species mixing.
Oh my God. Bluey's like fairly innocuous, I guess. I mean, like the one thing is, I think we were talking about it the other day. We were just like bullshitting after Bluey, and it's like, I guess they don't. I don't know if they have natives or if they were trying to show like aboriginals on Bluey. I don't know what kind of dog they would be. Like,
I don't even know.
They don't do that. But
so
Bluey's not woke, right? But Bluey's like fairly. I guess like for a lot of people, especially people that babysit kids, Bluey is like the totality of the like pre 4-year-old maybe like media ecosystem, because it's like such a smash hit that it's like it's kind of all we have at this point, which is kind of nice, right? I have not seen or heard mention of like Veggie Tales, right? Which is, to be frank, like mildly ideological. I don't know that it even counts as propaganda.
No, it's
like so
it's very explicitly Christian programming.
Oh yeah.
It's Christian programming, but like
it's a 90s Christian program, which means it lacks stridency. It's actually they wanted it to be quite approachable. They needed it to be marketable on a mainstream. That's why it was successful. That's why it actually broke through a little bit in that era. They used to sell, I don't remember what they were called, like Lifeway Christian stories. Y'all remember those mall Christian stores?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
They sold VeggieTales out of that and they did a brisk business.
Yeah. And the Narnia books. That's where I got my first copy of The Magician's Nephew.
Narnia is subtler, but still in the same. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think Narnia is still good. I would still, I think, be okay with my son reading that. I think it didn't. Don't bleep that, though. Don't bleep that, though. Yeah, I feel like, you know, it's okay for it to have valences of like I think it's okay. You know, like I would be fine with him reading the Ramayana. Like, that's quite explicit compared to the Chronicles of Narnia. It's not propagandistic because it's a beautiful story. Just like The Lord of the Rings is, well, maybe it's a little more propagandistic than Narnia.
Lord of the Rings? I mean,
it has pretty explicit like good and evil. I think we've long said on the podcast and off that like for me, like Lord of the Rings is the best, like best and best adapted pseudo-Christian like mythos, right? Like pseudo-Christian media, in that I mean, it ironically, it's not a thing that Tolkien holds to personally, but it's very explicitly like good and evil, and its basis is in a kind of black and white moral structure for the world building, right?
Well, he was a Catholic and he was writing about World War II, so I guess in that sense, like Catholicism having like, you know, more mythos built in than say Protestantism.
I think for fantasy it works better. I obviously as an individual, I prefer media as an adult that is like more gray, that I really hate, right? Like black and white kind of moral structures. But for fantasy, I think it works well, right? Especially my golden fantasy.
My pushback on that is I believe Harry Potter is pretty Protestant. It gets away. Like, I mean, you know, there are people who have like inherently better powers than the rest of them. They're like higher up than them. It's not like that Catholic original sin. We're all like on the baseline, all shit. What do you got?
Harry Potter is a Calvinist allegory. There are only so
expand
many.
Expand on that.
There are only so many.
Expand on
predetermined
this.
Wizards, right? There aren't that many. And whoever is going to be a wizard, you don't get to, it just happens. She never goes into how they figure out, you know, like, why is Hermione a wizard and both of her parents are muggles? It's predestination.
Oh my God.
You have no hope of ever entering into the wizarding world if you're not born predestined for it. It's Calvinism.
Anakin Skywalker, the Calvinist concept? Are you kidding me right now? Wow.
That's good.
Wow.
Yeah. So he never had a chance, which gives you some sympathy for him, but actual Calvinists lack that. So maybe not as direct. Because the wizards don't give a fuck about the muggles, right? In Harry Potter, they literally are like, it's literally like an underclass.
Yeah, they see them as less.
Like, they're like, oh, Voldemort, he's the Nazi. It's like, no, you guys are all like, you know, there's a Nazification happening in the wizarding world, right?
I don't like how they let the Chinese into Hogwarts.
Well, they have their own school with a really racist name.
Well, don't forget about Cho Chang.
Yeah, that's the allusion I'm making.
And the Patel.
So, I mean, I don't know. Like, do we want to talk? I was more ready to talk about media for babies. I guess that's because I have literally a baby, right?
Well, so you like, have a toddler.
When you were like, when you're like bringing up Lord of the Rings, I was like, yeah, but that's not really what we're talking about today.
Well,
children do read.
What's like, narrative thrusts, right? Yeah. So like, what I was going to ask about Bluey, which is because, like, you know, I don't have the streaming for Bluey, and we watch a really limited amount of TV as far as programming goes. And
you're
also
a good parent. Yeah, I understand.
I'm not saying that. I'm saying I don't know what I'm talking about. And so far, the American Association of Pediatrics seems to give good advisories. And one of them was no screens until 2. And because I'm like unhinged and a little bit anxious, I was like, well, that's just going to be everything. So we were not watching any TV. We were not doing any of that stuff until he and all of us got sick and we were all like dying, and we watched My Neighbor Totoro. So now we do Fridays and weekends, we do TV, and it's like a really limited diet of like certain children's programs that are targeted towards toddlers. And then like Crystal put on like the Ken Burns baseball documentary or something like that.
Well, I'll say this. I'm the one here who doesn't have a kid, obviously, but I think that both of y'all are terrible parents for even exposing your children to screens.
Thank you.
And that you should be more on top of that.
I know. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm, yeah, mm-hmm. It's always some no kid having motherfucker.
Good opinion, it's really, you joke.
Why don't you come over and babysit, you piece of shit?
Okay, you joke, but I actually feel that twinge. Feel it. I'm like, oh my God, you've been watching TV for like an hour. And if it's like, I'm tired as a motherfucker and I'm doing chores and I'm like, he's been watching Miss Rachel for an hour, then I'll be like, it's too much screens. Like, he's going to be a screen addled kid. And it's like, that's too much. You know, obviously everything in moderation. But yeah, my son does definitely Miss Rachel, Reishu, big time.
Oh, that's right.
Reishu.
It is very cute.
Sesame Street, still solid. And a lot of this is because, like, you know, we haven't subscribed to like PBS Kids, and I don't subscribe to Disney Plus. So it's like whatever is safe on YouTube. I was dipping my toe into Blippi because he's really into fire trucks right now. But I read a really interesting piece about Blippi.
Oh, how he shat on his old college roommate's chest while he was sleeping?
No.
Oh, yeah, he did that.
Not that.
Blippi from Smiling Frog. I don't know what this is.
You don't know Blippi?
I don't know what Blippi is, no.
Look up Blippi, bro.
So Blippi is just like a dude in like a propeller hat basically being like, whoa, look at this. Nope, it's very and it's like lots of like bring and like graphics popping up. It's very like visually, but it's like substanceless. So I read this really interesting article that kind of was like a cultural critique of what Blippi brought to the table, right? So like Blippi is vacuousness, it's surface. So even in the videos, Blippi goes to the fire station, but he's alone. He's not really, you're not getting a sense of who firefighters are to a community. Mm. You're not getting a sense of their place in the neighborhood. And my son is also like a very demanding DJ. He is like constantly like, I want to hear the song. I want to hear this song. I want to hear a song about this word. And he's a tyrant and I love him. But he wanted to listen to a fire truck song. And I was like, or an ambulance song. He just learned ambulance, am-a-nam-a-nams. That's how he said it. It's so good. Uh-huh. And I was like, oh, whatever, the first ambulance song. And it was a Blippi song, and it was shitty. First of all, it was suck shit because he was not making something beautiful. He was, or interesting. He was making something that like tickled this like little beep, boop, 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 boop of the brain. And the lyrics were horrible. One of them was like, it's an ambulance. It's a little hospital on wheels. And I was like, what the fuck is a hospital to him? There's so much like slop. It's not even AI slop. It's just people who think that they understand how to speak, and like entertaining children isn't just like being like, I can fucking be Blippi to my son, you know, like I need Mr. Rogers. I need Mr. Rachel. Cause like, they're not just teaching him, they're teaching me.
It's really interesting that this is like where we've kind of dived off into, because I was so under the assumption that everybody was, I suppose, as hands off as I am with stuff. And it's like, we do watch television and I put on Race Cars, and Race Cars is F1 highlights, and we watch cars drive around, right? And then what Daddy wants to watch is StarCraft replays. So he watches something that he can't understand on the screen, which is like 30-year-old sprites and like Koreans playing them. And then like, I don't know what else like we put on TV. And then there's Bluey, and then football. He can watch football. And I don't know that we watch a lot of like targeted kids stuff. So if like a television is on, if he's perceiving media, right? It's just something that is ambient. And I guess we had a short conversation that was basically like, we hate kids stuff. We've tried some of it. It's mostly extremely annoying, right? Miss Rachel's fine, right? You mentioned Miss Rachel. I think we put that on like a couple times.
It has its moments.
It's mostly because we're at the baby stage, right? So we're not even at narrative arcs that last 20 minutes. We can't sit through that, right? No. So it's literally just images. And most of it's so annoying that I've chosen instead to be like, would you like to perceive something that is just like visceral, like the sound of race cars, right? And he's like, yes, the sound of race cars are very good, right? And that lasts about 12 minutes. And then we want to go outside, right? And to me, that's been fine. And like, I honestly, right, I have no idea what it's going to be like to like transition into one, like narrative storytelling, and two, like a perception of the world outside, to where he starts like building an idea of the world. And mostly, I guess I would just try and nip the buds of the worst possible ideas that he could have. Right. So like,
that is actually a question that I wanted to pose to both of y'all. You have spent time in your adolescence in the worst spaces of the internet. And you can identify, well, I think, are you going to defend 4chan?
I was already like 18,
it
right?
It was 17, different 18, back
then. Right? I don't think it was, but I was already just like older, right? I wasn't like okay. the kid.
Oh,
the,
I was like 14, 15 when I first found out about 4chan.
I was young when I was on Something Awful.
Well, also like, for us of our age, it was a rite of, so first of all, it was this rite of passage, right? The first time some fucking friend showed you rotten.com, you had to like seek it out. Now it's just a constant, unending,
not just
flow.
Everywhere and everything. Yeah.
Everything is rotten.com.
So my question for y'all is, because you spent your youth, a portion of your youth, on these dark corners of the internet, what are y'all hoping to do to insulate your kids from that?
I'm not gonna let them have a phone or a computer. I really do like, I guess ultimately, like, I was going to ask like Maria just a question straight up, which is like, I don't really know. I don't know where I'm going to be with all that yet. But from what I'm like remembering about my childhood, I know that there are there's like the baseline radiation kind of ideology of like propaganda for kids, right? Like whatever this cartoon, whatever Ed and Eddie like perceives about America and intergender relations, right? And like all those things, they're going to be transposed. They're going to be like subliminal, right? They're going to have some effect. But like the overt messaging stuff, I don't know that it made a huge impact, right? But that's the exact kind of thing somebody would say if they can't perceive the impact it had, right? And then like secondarily, I guess my other question is like, if you're going to be an American, you have to be an American, right? Like you have to, you have to imbibe a certain amount of that culture, metabolize it, and then become whatever person that makes you. And I'm not sure how active of a role I feel like I need to play in like my kid's life, right?
Well,
because like,
that's very broad.
Like in,
I know
in
what you
filtering
mean.
That media, right?
Don't
in filtering
clip
the
that.
Media specifically. Oh, that is a very funny clip.
I mean, I don't know. I think like, you know, I have thoughts about like overtly preachy, like sort of virtue guided media anyway. Like Aesop's fables, even them, are a little pat, but the stories are nice. Like, there's an artfulness to them. And but at the same time, like, I'm not, you know, Ed, and Eddie may have like reflected the zeitgeist of a certain moment in American culture, you know, but it in and of itself was not necessarily messaging. We at like this later time in our lives can critique it, but I think there's a lot to be said for like, what does it mean for entertaining? And I'm not saying Ed, and Eddie is this, but entertaining and enriching things for children to exist on their own merit. Like, is something that is simply beautiful or not really it's not even asking like sending a message. It's more just like asking you a question. Like, that is important. Like, there does not need to be direct messaging. And I find when I like my limited Connor has been the way through which I've been exposed to like more conservative children's material, but I've also encountered it in my personal life. And it is like without fail, extremely pedantic.
Oh my God.
Skimps on the writing, skimps on the art, skimps on the whimsy, and really is like in that way reflective of more, it's conformity, it's obedience, it's you know, it's not giving children anything enriching at all.
That's what I was going to say about VeggieTales. Like, I've watched VeggieTales, I think, like as like a preteen almost, right? Like kids that were still watching it when they were like 12. And it's like,
yeah.
You guys know the TV like exists and there's way better shit on there. But like, I remember, and I've heard that VeggieTales is actually quite good, right? It's like quite entertaining for Christian media. And I remember it being like really boring. I was like, this is just some schlock garbage.
Nah,
and I know now it gets so much worse than that.
Right. It gets way worse because, you know, I went to a Christian school and so we watched VeggieTales all the time, but we watched other stuff. VeggieTales was not like, they don't even have a Jesus character in the show. Yeah. Like they tell some stories, but like what I remember most is Super Larry. It's the cucumber where he dresses up as a superhero. And like that has nothing to do.
Or the hairbrush song.
Everybody wanted to fuck him.
What? Sorry?
Super Larry. Sorry, what? We all wanted to fuck Super Larry.
Oh, okay.
But
I wasn't on 4chan around that time.
It doesn't matter that time, baby. Shit hasn't changed for me.
It's not explicitly Christian. It is implicitly Christian for sure.
Well, they tell Bible stories, and that is a form of like the Ramayana. Like, that is storytelling. Those are entertaining. When I was a kid, I watched Superbook, which was a Korean anime about these kids and their robot who time traveled through a magical Bible and went into the biblical past. I did not become more Christian because of Superbook, but I learned Bible stories. It is storytelling. It's entertainment.
Yeah.
Did they meet Christian Jesus?
I can't remember. I think they did have like the one. You know how they had that one serious episode where they're like, "Oh my God, like Robo, we're at Golgotha." That's like that fucking tweet where it's like Jesus on the cross, like breathing his last, and it's like Goofy at the crucifixion.
It's funny. You mentioned the conservative media, and obviously, you know, listeners to the show know what I'm going to say next. But it's just I have to go back to the Tuttle Twins. And one thing that I've noticed is I've read almost every Tuttle Twins book, and they're good. Like, they're not like literature. It's just like, okay, you are explaining. I mean, as good as explaining free trade and why we should not regulate industries for kids. Yeah. Like, as good as that can be, but they're well-written, they're explanatory, and they come from a place of compassion. Whereas the show, the cartoon, which is on Angel Studios, the medium has changed the message a bit. And the cartoon is much more like, oh, your friend thinks that we have to share compulsive, or like we must be compelled to share. They're stupid. And like they make fun of the person that disagrees with them. And it's all about getting the comeuppance on the person who like runs the HOA or something like that. It's much, because, you know, it's got to be funny, I suppose. Maybe that's their thinking. But the books are more like, you know, I could see you're sitting with your libertarian dad and he's reading you the Tuttle Twins and it's like much more peaceful and calm, but you're watching the show on your own, like you gotta laugh, you gotta be engaged. And unfortunately, and this isn't just something on the right, we're seeing this on the left too, it's like that comes from, oh, the joke has to be on the person I disagree with. The joke has to be on someone in this. Someone has to fall in mud in order for this story to resolve itself.
But the thing is that the quote, quote, woke children's media isn't doing that specific thing, yeah. Right? So let's say more adult oriented, like the left making fun of people for having stupid ideas is usually on a more level playing field in terms of like, hey, you're my age. So it's incredibly stupid that you think that because like, you breed the same, you're the same age as me, right? It's literally like, it's so weird because it conservative, like cultural morality is so much around respect your elders, like have this very, you know, behavior. And it at time it did include like polite, like general civility, politeness, whatever. And like the way that there used to be these complaints about the kids these days, there's no yes, sir, no, sir, yes, ma'am, whatever. And now they're like, oh, like, your friend thinks that like people who are poor should be able to eat, like they're a fucking, you know, redacted, like yeah. slur, you yeah. know? And it's like, so you want to rate, that's how you want your children to be. Like, it doesn't make sense to me because it really clashes. This virulent meanness is, and in some ways, I guess that's good, like mask off, but like you're raising a generation of your children to be cruel. Why?
Oh, I don't think kids want to watch this shit. Like so the thing.
Oh yeah, no, I bet they don't. Yeah.
Have you watched like Maria? Have you watched like Tuttle Twins?
I've seen like a very little bit. It's very painful. It's not entertaining at all.
It's caustic and it's not like they don't think like a child. Like it's not even think like a child. It's there's no fun in it, right?
They don't connect.
When they make owns, when they make like political sniping at the other side, yeah. Like I remember we watched the fucking pilot for like the show and like Karl Marx is in it. And it's so clear that the writers are like trying to win an internet argument. And it's like, this is for children, dumbass. Like make it fun, make it funny. Right. But these people are not fun or funny. They cannot write right for children.
Their grandma
is not entertaining.
It's like the whole show is the jokes that they throw into kids' movies so that the adults stay entertained. Exactly. The whole show is jokes for the parents.
The grandma on the show, her catchphrase is, we have things to do, places to go, and communists to offend. And if like that is your catchphrase in the show of like, our goal is to offend somebody that we disagree with, like, what the fuck are we doing with a kids' show? What are you doing, people?
Well, kids don't know what that means. Kids don't know why that's like clever or cute, right? They're just like, what a weird.
It's like,
I don't know what that means. What a thing to say.
What it reminds me of is when we were kids in the Bush era of just being like, fucking hippies.
Yeah.
Like, hippies are growth. And it's like, what even is a hippie?
Well,
it would be so much better if they just did G.I. Joe and they're like, we're killing communists.
No,
isn't this
okay.
fun? I've got a gun and we're going to, you know,
so
that doesn't make sense nowadays. But
that did remind me of something I wanted to talk about in terms of like the programming, maybe around like when we were smaller, or younger, like the alternatives that people like when we were coming up, like the huge, huge thrust of programming on television for children was products. Yeah. We were not watching programming that was enriching. We had to seek it out, right? Sesame Street started so far back when, meeting a very real need still to this day. But it was like, oh, we got this like manufacturer that'll make these little fucking dudes. Like, how do we get the guy? Oh, let's make a show about the dudes so they'll fucking buy the dudes, you know? And it's like, it was all about the dudes in the show that you were then going to buy, right? So it was a real like wasteland, because even G.I. Joe in that nominal like PSA dare way, they would be like, we just fucking like blew. Basically, they were like, we blew away the fucking like Iranian, right? That was the Ayatollah that we just like killed with our laser tank. Like, he's fucking actually dead now. Hey, kids, don't do drugs. Like, that's a nothing. That's a focus group of like think tank people and the toy industry. You know what I'm saying? I'm not even saying it was political. It was just
it's
like
far
a
more
bunch
insidious.
Of focus
group. Like marketing. So, I mean, I say like in our day, right? Like, I did not watch G.I. Joe unless it was on like Boomerang or some shit, like one of those like cable channels that you had to pay way, way, way more money for. But like, by our time, G.I. Joe's was from like the 70s, like 80s.
We were maybe a lot. We watched a lot of the stuff on the Armed Forces Network when I was growing up.
Hell yes.
So AFN, I was getting hella out of date programming. So that's just
awesome.
Note for me, for my cultural
exposure. The product, like G.I. Joe is so clearly this just slop right, made to sell an action figure, right? But by the 90s, the like machine of turning these intellectual products and these cartoons, which at the time, right, are like very polished, right? Like anything on Cartoon Network or Nickelodeon from the 90s is some of the best animation that has been on television. And by the way, I would argue still, right, like to this day, the quality of the writing, the quality of the animation, and then the marketing tie-ins were not nearly as obvious. They're obviously there. They're obviously a driver of making the thing, right?
Like Nickelodeon had a very like ugly, intentionally ugly aesthetic, right? So Rugrats, they generally look like fucking garbage, but it's such a good show. The art style is so good.
Yeah.
And
talking about Nickelodeon in general, or like Rugrats, I remember just being like gross.
That era, like so, like Rugrats and like Ed and Eddie, like they the art style is gross. It's like kind of like that was
that's
their
Cartoon
era.
Network.
Oh, sorry. Whatever.
I've watched a lot of cartoons.
The channels. I watched Toonami on Cartoon Network. Is that what I watched?
When you watch Cartoon Network, there are eras of animators and graduating classes from like CCA. Mm-hmm. And so like Klasky Csupo was the production company behind Rugrats and Aureal Monsters.
Oh,
and
God, that was so good.
People that worked on that show went on to create Ed, Edd n Eddy. And we see that now. It's like Adventure Time, Chowder, Regular Show, and Flapjack. Like they all worked on each other's shows. They went to class together. So there is like the Adventure Time aesthetic has like bled out into so much in terms of cartooning. That's, and
by the way, on the back when I was still on 4chan, they called it the Cal Arts era. No, it literally has been like 10 years.
It's Cal Arts era.
The Steven Universe style is like the Cal Arts. Yep, that's the current Cal Arts style. Yeah. Or it's probably not even anymore, but
just as an aside, you know that those guys actually liked Adventure Time for a long time. It was Steven Universe that really turned them off from like everything. Where like it became like
it was too woke and gay.
It's not just that it was too woke. At first, there were too many girls. There's too many female characters in this fucking show.
There were two male characters and one of them with a deadbeat dad. So
I don't think I've ever watched Steven Universe. I do feel like I do think
a lot about the media ecosystem that my son like is growing up in. Like I know I can't control a lot, but you know, it doesn't bother me if we're watching like Pocoyo or Miss Rachel 800 times or whatever, because we're not having that much time with the TV and I'm like fine with that, you know, but there's something inside of me that has really over the years developed like a real antipathy towards Disney IP and the company. It fills me with sort of like a visceral disgust that it's sort of like it's economic. It's like a cultural. It's a ubiquity. It's an aggressiveness. And while The Lion King is still, in my opinion, one of the greatest animated films of all time, you know, I am not going to show him Disney stuff. Like other people show him Disney stuff. I really try not to. I did not buy him Disney stuff. I'm not interested in it. Like I'm going to, you know, let his aunt and uncle and other Disney people in my life, like show him that. But there's something I just really dislike about it. Like I have no choice. Even to the diapers. I can't buy diapers that are the right kind that don't have fucking Disney on them. Yeah, I think it's foul. It's a replacement of a cultural visual vernacular with intellectual property that I really dislike.
You know, Alec and I, we didn't talk about this on the show, but we have talked about this in some of our phone calls of just like there is a bipartisan call to boycott Disney. And on the left, it's what you just said. And on the right,
they're too woke and gay.
It's too woke and gay. Yeah. So like if you took Charlie Kirk and my buddy Cody and you sat them both in front of like one of these live action remakes, and like Charlie Kirk and Ben Shapiro and that ecosystem have spoken to like they've made it woke. Like this is such a blatant cash grab to modernize and liberalize Disney values, which is like, what are you talking about? And then on the left, it is just like, this is such a blatant cash grab to retain your IP or like just like squeeze as much money and blood out of this Lion King franchise as you possibly can. And it falls incredibly flat. Like for Dumbo, it made and Snow White is like, okay, I guess you're trying to hold on to your IP, I guess.
But they don't fucking need to. Why do you need to hold on to the goddamn IP?
And then there's also,
write the story.
But then we also have Lilo and Stitch, which is like, dude, you that's not going to go public domain anytime soon. Why are you making this?
Also, apparently, I mean, I'm still on Twitter. And so, like, I would periodically sort of get these, sort of, like, I guess there's a new Disney movie everybody hates out. And everybody was, like, posting all these sort of recaps of how, like, Lilo and Stitch in the animated movie is about, it's about family and it's about sacrifice and staying together and having a commit to other people. Like, that seems like a good lesson, right? But in this remake, apparently the older sister character chooses herself. She's like, I'm going to college. And she fucking leaves her little sister.
Oh,
and I don't
bizarre.
Know. But, like, you know, is that pandering? Is that a lack of care? Is that, like, what are they doing?
Okay. So there's actually, on that left, right spectrum, there are two arguments about that. On the right, it is criticizing, like, the abolishment of the nuclear family. This is the future the left wants, right? You're getting rid of the nuclear family. On the left, they're looking at it from a way of, once again, another native of Hawaii is taken by the state that is, like, a colonizer mindset. Mm. And so both sides of the political spectrum are like, this movie is fucked. Why are they doing this? Why did they rewrite my kid's cartoon? Why is Han Solo dead now?
I mean, that is like, that's why the fuck did he mess with it so much? You know, I'm just thinking, what is the revisiting about? If not, like, maybe for George Lucas, he was like deeply like, I have to get my little fucking toy. Right?
No, he sold Disney for like $1 billion.
See,
he sold
it to Disney for like $1 billion. They are a devourer of culture. They are a devourer and a processor of culture. So it's not only like Star Wars' biggest enemy was the guy who made Star Wars ultimately, right? But like then Disney took it and they said, oh, that's a little too gritty. And then they sanded it and put it through a flattener and they turned it into fruit roll-up. And it's like not even like there was a ton of like edge to Star Wars.
Well, I feel like two ways. Like, let me come at this. But one, I guess I don't know what this episode's about, but I guess it's just generally about children's media. So
we've got some
woke books.
No, I've consumed a ton of Disney content, right? Especially old movies, because I actually am deeply a fan of like animation and hand drawn animation and old ways of doing stuff. Like of the Disney products, like Alice in Wonderland stands out as like visually just a like banquet. It's like wonderful to watch. It's fluid. Anyway, not to gush.
I actually have kind of an embarrassing Disney story about my childhood. When I went to public school and finally started talking to like other people about like, you know, once you get old enough to talk about your childhood and like reminisce on it, I found out the hard way that other families did not have a VHS copy of Song of the South. And it was something that whenever I'd go over the summer, whenever I'd go to Louisiana, my aunt Judy would just like pop that on. And I've seen the Disney movies I've seen the most are like Tron and Song of the South. And it was, I found out that it was a bootleg copy of Song of the South. They didn't sell
it. That is some shit right there.
I don't want to know what club my Aunt Judy was a part of that gave her a bootleg copy.
A homemade.
That's so funny.
And now I just have, if anyone asks them, like, Song of the South. Is that Splash Mountain?
That's the racist one, right?
Well, see you guys.
Holy shit, is that funny?
Yeah. I do have something to say about that point you made about like beauty, right? Visual sumptuousness, beauty as like for its own sake. I have to say this, like the fact that like Disney in this sort of like bid to continually reissue stuff, they have to find some fucking shit to do. So like one of the things that really attracted me to The Lion King was not only like no humans, I was an animal person and I loved that the movie had no people in it. And then later on, of course, to find out like, oh, of course it's a good story. It's like one of the good stories. But then the animation, you saw the hand of the animator. You saw those lines. You saw that kinetic energy embodied in the line that when they fixed it, it was a deader movie. And it was there was no reason for it except to do a reissue. And I think that there's something so important
And especially right now, like, children need to see beauty. They need to see tactility. They need to touch. They need to experience. And they need to, like, think. They need to be left alone to think about something, you know? Mm. And I brought woke books because I wanted to bring one example of a woke book that I don't think is very good.
This is great. Okay. This is gonna counterbalance that time that we read It's Okay to Be White on the podcast. So,
yeah, we did. I think, like, the whole thing, maybe. It was really brutal. Did you know
that marshmallows are also white?
Oh, but sugar.
You didn't think about that.
And milk. It was all dairy products and sugar.
I'm so obsessed with the sugar one, though, because that's actually really fucking on the nose. Because do you know how white sugar is bleached?
It's literally like the molasses, like, bleaches out, right? It, like,
they process it by filtering it through bone char.
Oh, wow. No, I didn't know that.
So yeah, sugar. Natural sugar is brown.
It's brown, yeah.
Okay.
So by the way, there is a literal human. Have you ever seen that political cartoon about the sugar mound? Right. There is, like, and it's something so on the nose and racist, you're like, that's actually kind of, like, politically poignant. Like, it actually is, right? The sugar mound.
You're
is,
so wrong, you actually are right.
Yes.
Like,
yes,
you're making the point that you did, yeah.
If you know, like, refined sugar is, like, piled on top of itself as like the liquid runs out, and this literally used to be done with, like, a shovel, right? Wow. So the molasses oozes to the bottom, forming a pyramid, and the peak of it would be literally the whitest sugar, right? And the bottom is, like, dregs until it's kind of this, like, sludgy stuff that you can then usually, right, add water to and make it into, like, molasses syrup that you'd sell, right?
So the, top,
the white
metaphor.
Sugar, the shit that you send to Britain, to the white people, right, that are literally buying this shit from, like, you know, Caribbean islands, right, from Haiti, like, and Jamaica, right, is literally this white peak on the top of a pyramid that a brown person shovels up over and over and over again. And then with, like, water and time, this, like, all of that labor for just this one little white, like, bit on top that gets, like, put into somebody's tea, gets taken across the pond.
Yeah, the molasses doesn't make it there until it arrives in the form of rum, right?
Or as rum, yeah. Too. But I mean, yeah. it's
as,
like,
a refined product.
It's like literally a pyramid where the top is white, right? It's
yeah.
Like, Jesus. It's like, so, I don't know. Anyway, I mean, it really struck me as, like, a...
Well, that's one thing. It's just like you're writing something that's very pat and cute. You're not thinking. It's not making you think, clearly. Like, you're not clearly thinking about that, you know? And I think, like, why the far right or right wing extremists, like, they lack a capacity to generate beauty, curiosity, wonder, and amazement in such a way that it invites thinking and processing in the direction that they are philosophically, right? Like, maybe religious art throughout history, like, obviously Catholic liturgical art is very beautiful, and obviously Catholic liturgy, especially, like, in the Middle Ages, was very conservative. But other than, like, right now, I don't see that. Like, there is not a tapping into those energies of awe,
art,
beauty,
right?
No,
like,
right.
Like,
they were laborers.
The paintings,
craftspeople.
Aren't made by, like, theologians, right? Like,
right.
Well, I mean, I'm sure there's, like,
in Eastern tradition, you could see, like, a spiritual. Well, actually, some medieval artists did enter into, like, spiritual meditation while creating art. This is neither here nor there. The point is that, like, what I find is that things that are, like, quote unquote woke are things that are more open ended, and the things that I enjoy seeing and having my son be around, I like them to be more open-ended. Like, Miss Rachel and Sesame Street, I appreciate them because they are kind of filling a need. Like, I'm not always on. I'm not always on to do the, like, little chat, and I have to do the dishes, but I can't put on another train video. I'm sick of that shit. You know what I mean? But, like, I like to read books that are beautiful to me as well as to him.
Yeah.
I want to be experiencing that. And so, like, I brought, like, a couple of books, but one that I brought on that's on the top that I haven't returned to the library and, like, 3 months is not good, but it is overtly woke. It is No, my first book of protest, and I'm sorry to the author. It's not that it's a bad book. It's just that it's they didn't read it out. I don't feel like they read it out loud.
Yeah, you need to do that. Yeah,
like,
you need to read it to
the
children.
The
I would
rhyming,
yeah.
The cadence of the rhyming is really, like, chunky, and it feels very shoehorned. And I think more than, like, maybe needing to know about, like, and also, like, Gloria Steinem, like, okay, cool. I'm very, you know, okay. But like, what would this look like if we're just having a book about a kid who says no? Why is that? Like, why is teaching autonomy? Like, if you teach a child autonomy and the ability to think independently and to reason and to critically assess, why do I need to tell them, like, you can say no? And like, this is like both too advanced and not fun to read.
Okay. Can you give us,
hit us with some of it?
Yeah.
Hit
it. Oh my God. Okay. Which is the worst?
Just like random page. Do the random page thing.
Okay. This actually was a good page. So, okay. When women weren't treated with the same respect as men, Gloria Steinem harnessed the power of the pen. She said, no, no, we want equality now. In the pages of Miss Magazine, she showed women how. Like, it's just like a little, like, there's like maybe too many syllables for me. I don't know. Maybe it's not the most awkward one.
Wait, hang on. May I?
Yeah.
Because your son made me read this to him a lot.
Where yeah, I sent this one when they babysat him.
There's one that's,
I mean, I guess
the Malala,
like,
page.
Did he like the Malala page?
Oh God,
the Greta Thunberg page is very awkward. It's like the cadence isn't good.
Human?
Yeah, human.
Judith Human was told there were things she couldn't do, like go to school or ride a bus. She knew that wasn't true. She said no, no, and rallied from her chair to make the world a kinder place, accessible and fair. Actually, the rhyming of that.
I don't know how to describe it, but like sometimes when I'm reading it, like I think the Frederick Douglass page was not very, like, I don't know.
I have it in front of me. Let me. Black people were enslaved before the Civil War. Frederick Douglass ran for freedom. Then he spoke out for more.
That's awkward.
He said, no, no, all people must be free. And when he talked his talk, Lincoln had to agree.
Awkward. That ending is awkward. Right. Doesn't flow.
Well, you know what they say. Find what your niche is. That leads to riches.
I mean, so the cadence is bad. When I see this, and I would qualify this as like woke children's media, I do not find this like particularly, I don't find this like offensive at all.
It's not
it seems
offensive.
Like not woke offensive. And good.
It's,
right?
Really, it's history. It's not
I'm
saying
scrolling
anything.
I'm scrolling to the Thunberg page, though, and like my issue is I care deeply about climate change to the point that it makes me depressed. Right. But like I do not know at what juncture I'm going to like try to tell my child that he was actually been born into a cursed world. Right. That is probably going to be destroyed. And sorry about that.
I guess.
Right. Like
I wouldn't put it to him like that.
But this implies that, right? So like what to me, right? Like and I am like very serious about this. Like I don't understand the need to feel like these subjects ought to be broached if you cannot tell your child the truth, right? And the truth is this shit's fucked and I don't know what to do about it, right? This is very, very brutal. And I don't really
I've thought about this.
Yeah, I don't go ahead.
I do. Okay. First of all, I'm gonna preface this by saying, like, my first experience like thinking through this conceptually was back in high school when I read a book by I know he is a discredited writer and thinker, but Bruno Bettelheim, who I know he's a piece of shit, lot of baggage. But he wrote a book called The Meaning, like this meaning and importance of fairy tales. And a lot of the sort of maybe follow up on the ideas is not great. But the sort of hypothesis that he made is that like the reason that fairy tales are so compelling for children is because they are edgy. They're scary. They bring up things that are difficult and too big for children to conceive of. Like you can't conceive of your mama being mean to you. So in that moment, she's your wicked stepmother, right? These are sort of like Jungian sort of drawn out concepts that he's kind of applying to fairy. But like, just because I said Jung.
Alec made the weed motion.
Listen, I don't know. I just think like children are processing whether or not you're telling them things, right? Like it's important that my son knows to conserve water. Right. I learned that from a Grover book when I was a kid. The ozone layer. I mean, I remember having serious, deep, abiding concerns and sadness about deforestation, loss of habitat as a kid.
No, me too.
Let's not forget that we were talking about the cartoons that we watched growing up. Let's not forget the Rocko's Modern Life song, R-E-C-Y-C-L-E, recycle,
C-O-N-S-E-R-E, conserve. Don't you P-O-L-U-T, pollute the water, sky, or sea, or else you're going to get what you deserve.
I have to say, like, I think that was very nice, by the way. Thank you, Maria. I have to say, like, now that you mention it, I think the nihilism of a boomer to Gen X, like, writers on children's programming. And I think a lot of Gen X writing on children's program, I think, like, deeply affected the millennials that remember it, because, like, these really archetypal, I'm just thinking of cartoons, right, that we grew up with, but, like, they are very dark in a way that, by the way, I appreciate now. And I think is really, like, vital, right? Like,
I think a lot about Animaniacs having the character so darn insane.
I think a lot about that, Connor.
I do. Just think about it. Like, from the moment we were kids, we had been primed to think of Saddam Hussein as a bad guy.
Yeah, Donald Rumsfeld like sitting there, like, pushing yes on all the WB fucking edits.
Yeah,
I got you.
No, is any coincidence that Steven Spielberg, creator, executive producer of the Animaniacs, went on to direct Joe Biden's fucking debate prep?
No, yeah. Actually, you've got a fucking point there. I mean, yeah, WB is a Zionist shit. I don't know.
It's a fair point. I mean, like, there were, like, the smart, like, the little bit older, like, sassier kids show. Like, I was so obsessed with Rocko's Modern Life, obviously, as a kid, because I think it didn't talk down to me. Animaniacs was, like, the, like, you know, it was probably the best Looney Tunes revival we have seen to this day, save for the original Space Jam, obviously. You know, but
I hated that movie.
I think Space Jam is a classic. Iconic. I think it's way overrated. I think it is so
it's
nothing.
Such a
film.
It's such a vibe, and also such a valuable piece of history.
100%.
My dad, like, recorded, like, hours and hours and hours of, like, reruns of, like, classic Looney Tunes and Rocky and Bullwinkle before we moved abroad to a non-English speaking country, and this was in, like, the early 90s. So, like, a lot of the cartoons that were in circulation are no longer in circulation. So I saw a lot of visual imagery that was not contextualized to me. Let's just say that.
I've been watching on Saturday mornings. I will put on Looney Tunes for my 2-year-old. I don't know if I'm supposed to be doing that. But by the way,
I think it's a little too violent for my son. I don't want to put it on for him.
It is cartoonish, but it is overtly violent. Every single one of them, violence is a gag. Right?
Your son's going to put a brick in a glove and just, like, drag around the house and hit you with
like a razor blade.
Your son is going to go to art school so he can learn trompe l'oeil so he can paint tunnels like Wile E. Coyote.
Very good. I was like, where are you going with this?
I had a destination, excellent. And it is pancaked into the wall. That's the destination.
The Valley of the Gods, y'all.
Chaos is good. Like, it should be chaotic. Like, kids do deserve some chaos. Like, maybe not Cocomelon, like, mind, like, melting, but, like, chaos is good. Messy, good. A little edgy, good. I'm not trying to say, like, I'm not showing my kid, like, Blade Runner, there should be exposure to things that challenge him or give him thoughts, or if he, you know, like, that I think is the value of really 100%. Quality media, right? So, like, I have this book that, like, I bought. He's sort of into it, sort of, like, kind of explores it, but it's this book called They All Saw a Cat by this guy Brendan Wenzel, and he's a really fabulous illustrator. He made another book called Life that is so poetic and really beautiful and moves me to tears, but this book is just about a cat and how a kid sees the cat, and how a dog sees the cat, and how a fish sees the cat. And it's like a bat sees the cat, and the bat is, you're seeing, like, echolocation visualization. Like, this is not about fucking anything, but it is, right?
It's about standpoint theory.
It's about perception. But it doesn't have to be.
That sounds very sweet, actually.
But also, like, there's a scary page in it for a kid his age.
By the way, I really do think, and I don't know what you think about this, like, I really do think that showing kids, like, kids scary stuff. Yeah, exactly, like,
this
that.
This is scary.
And having them be kind of scared is, like, an incredibly, like, formative, important, like, experience.
I mean, it's like the sort of, like, process, right, of, like, whatever secure attachment looks like. I'm not, like, a professional, obviously, but, like, the experience of fear and the resolution of it, the knowledge that safety is still there, that you are not alone, like the horror of being alone, which is so primal, the horror of darkness, the horror of the unknown. Like, these are all things that have to be grappled with. These are really primordial feelings. Like, so much good storytelling is rooted in ancient storytelling for a good fucking reason. Like, we're very much still wired in a certain way, you know?
Like, Connor, what if there was like a scary dog?
Do you ever fucking
teeth.
Think about
you ever think about that? It's pretty scary.
Well, I'm just thinking about
what if there was a dog that seemed nice and then you got close? It was a scary dog. That's pretty spooky.
The one
I never thought of it like
the book that I read a lot of the kid was Possum Come a Knockin', and it's all about a possum that like knocks on the door and the grandma goes to open it and the possum's not there. And then the possum knocks again. The dad goes to open it, and the possum's not there. And like the illustrations, the possum's always hiding. And he's got like, you should look this up. He's got like a little top hat and like a little vest on. He's just like,
I thought this was going to be another like racist book.
God, I hope not.
I mean, the thing is, what's interesting is like
Possum Come a Knockin' is out of print as it has been.
You know,
no longer published. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's actually so cute.
It's adorable. So yeah, I'm looking cute. At it.
And my dad would sing it with like, or he would like sing read it, and so he had this like song that he would do with it, which was, yeah, you know.
Okay,
but I of course never saw myself this possum that was a knockin', which makes me think of Plato's Allegory of the Cave.
I never transposed this upon my ego.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
This puppet show is so fucking good.
Oh, they like it. I thought you were gonna be like,
I love it.
Oh, you're like, I love this.
Yes.
The candle goes out, and they're like, "Boo! Put it back on."
Hey guys, is this the cave? I just came from above. This is fucking so good.
Get out of here. You guys know you're just in a cave, and they're like, "Boo! Shut up."
Boo. They hated put Jesus the for telling the truth.
Put the puppets back on.
Oh my God. Like,
don't you want to see a real dog instead of a shadow dog?
So wait, like, I assume there's more books, but like, let's intersperse this real quick.
It's,
like,
no, it's okay.
Like, cause you're reminding me, like the thing I was going to say earlier about like Disney is like the beauty of the Disney works, right? Of the things that the animators and the song makers and the writer, blah, blah, that they crafted. Even when you go back and look at it, it's just so clearly part of the monolith, right? Like Disney, the brand. So it's like even now, right? To view these works, right? Now that they're actually all out, right? Because they used to just be in the vault because it was like a VHS thing, right? Like if you remember, these things were unpurchasable. You couldn't even like watch them because there was only this certain release schedule. But now they're all available, right? And when
except for Song of the South, which is
except
not
for, well,
Disney
yeah,
Plus.
Except for the ones that are bad or the ones that are deemed problematic, right?
Let's I think just it's say. The only
or,
one,
yeah, Disney or won. The ones that, or some of the ones that are public domain that they do not want you to like know are public domain, so they're not even on anything Disney, right?
Yeah.
Steamboat Willie, unfortunately, has like as the first thing. There's so much homage to it that everybody knows what it is, so it has to be on there. But look. It's not all of the old Mickey Mouse cartoons are racist. Some of them are not on there because they're just like, why remind people that they can use this, right? Anyway, so like the thing is, now that when you look at them in like the Disney Plus app or whatever the fuck, it's so clear that like the schedule and advance of these productions is so much faster paced now. The quality is so much lower than it's literally a different product, right? These 3D ones are just fundamentally different, and they've lost like a lot of soul. They're original works to the degree that they want to be, but then like, are you really going to look at something like, you know, Alice in Wonderland is in fact quite woke, right, for its day. It's one of the only ones that's not about, you know, somebody of the gentry, right, a woman of the gentry. She's just a little rich girl. Sorry.
Isn't the story, well, I mean, I guess it's more the history of the book, right? Like, wasn't
the history of the book is like a bit of a groomer. Disputed. Yeah.
It would be right up their alley.
Lewis Carroll is bad, right? He's not.
Yeah.
Is it Lewis Carroll? Lewis Carroll is a pedophile, right? But the story that he wrote about a little girl is one of the less problematic Disney princess style media, right?
Well, it's in a fantasy land, so like if they're being racist to anybody there, like we can't tell.
Oh wait, and they're being British racist, so you really can't tell. Well, because they're in Britain at the time.
No, I know.
Cut that. And the person, by the way, that rules over Wonderland is a queen. She's an actual lady. She's a mean, evil lady, but she's a lady, and she has like
matriarchy, girl boss.
Do you remember the little cuck king? The little he's like literally like a tiny little guy. It's very funny. But anyway, I actually find it like impossible to divorce like the Disney media from the company, right? Like just looking at the media themselves.
That's how I feel. And I do feel like, you know, maybe whatever risk taking in new media looked like during the Toy Story era, I think you're right. They were like, this is as far as it goes. We're not going to push it to the limits. We're choosing a restrained style to focus on our visuals and our storytelling and our writing. Right now it's like, what if like fire and water fucked? Like, what about that? You know, they're like, oh my God, look at how cool the water and the fire look when they're like fucking, you know, it's just like, I don't give a fuck about that. Like, I get it's about like racial harmony, but this movie is not like giving. You know, it's not giving the hand of man.
You should come back to talk about the Inside Out series, because I think it's like deep, like there actually are some quite touching like moments in it, like about memory and loss and all this kind of stuff. But the way that it treats like the internal workings of our mind is actually fucked. Like, it's like not, there is no logic. It's just like an automata. And there's these little guys that are basically like trying to keep us entertained. Right. Like, anyway,
there are theories.
Well, I wanted to say about the Toy Story example that you gave. At that point in time, Pixar wasn't owned by Disney. Mm-hmm. And so like maybe Disney helped distribute it, but Disney didn't buy or acquire Pixar until 2006. Mm. And so like you had a long chunk of Pixar stuff that was, you know, independently made and was more daring and more fun. And now it's like what you said, like what if water and fire fuck? What if a shoe could talk and a shoelace was voiced by John Ratzenberger or something?
Speaking of problematic shoelaces, you know what's still in the thing? Aristocats. And they have not, if you've seen Aristocats, you know the scene that I'm talking about. It's still in there. The Siamese cat scene in Aristocats?
Oh, are
still
you talking-
in there. Oh, still no. Voiced by a, I'm pretty sure a white dude.
But they took out the Siamese cat sequence from Lady and the Tramp, didn't they?
Maybe in the live remake they made.
The live remake?
And they're remaking the Aristocats as well.
Are you talking about
the chopsticks? I know what you're talking about.
That's Aristocats. That's not
Aristocats. Okay, so there are two Siamese cat like related racism.
Oh shit. Am I thinking of the wrong movie?
No, there's Lady and the Tramp, and
there's Aristocats. There are two instances.
There are multiple examples throughout that era of Disney where they
We are Siamese, if you please.
Oh, is that gone? Yes.
No. It's gone into Lady and the Tramp remake.
Okay.
Really?
Yeah, and Questlove was supposed to make...
By the way, their names are Psy and Am, which is pretty good. Wow. But the Aristocats racism is still in there.
They took out the Siam racism from the musical Cats, too. I forgot. There was a very extended about a very racist junk of Siamese cats who were fought off by like a big old British Tom. Oh, my God. Wow. I had no idea. So back to the original point, which was like, you know, let's say Disney had its eyeball on Pixar for doing that kind of thing with the new media, taking risks, like kind of trying to be like, maybe if not more artistic, more adventurous and more in tune with maybe something meaningful and a little challenging for kids, let's say, even though whatever Toy Story was offering was of a limited level of challenging, right? It's not like your dad dying or whatever. In the 30s, when like color animation and surround sound were these new technologies, like the animators in the Disney studios were interested in experimenting and pushing boundaries with this media in a way that was artistic for all audiences. Like Fantasia for its time, the way it used the technology, the way it was intended to live was truly an artistic work and one that really enriched me as a child. And there was such an important part for me, which was, this is a piece of music that is not about anything. So we're going to do an animation that is not about it. It's an abstract. It's giving you an understanding of what abstraction is in music by doing it with animation. And I want to, they did a new Fantasia in 2000. They tried to do the, this is abstract music, so here's an abstract animation again, and they couldn't fucking do it. They shoehorned a narrative in there.
I would be very, very curious if Fantasia 2000, because there were some very, very loose narratives in the original Fantasia, like very, very loose. Like,
the dino one,
the hippo and the gators.
Oh my God, that one was so good. The Night on Bald Mountain, with the like the Marian like vaginal opening. Love that.
Mussorgsky into Ave Maria. But the original Fantasia and that era of Merry Melodies, I wonder if Fantasia 2000 had the same production style, which is that the storyboarding also had the bars for sheet music underneath it. And so the storyboarding lined up with the music.
Yeah.
And I don't think animation's done that way anymore.
In that way, like Fantasia was like the last hurrah of, I can't remember what they called it, but it was a series of short animations that could be, by the way, played for live music if theaters were still without sound. Basically, they could send you a reel that you could play and you could have a live accompaniment dating, by the way, like, which is an ascription to kind of like vaudeville-esque like shorts dating way, way back to like the teens and the 20s. I mean, maybe not the teens. I'm forgetting. Right.
Well, it's been around for a while.
And Fantasia is just like a ascription, like a throwback for that generation would be a throwback to a generation before when they're in some theaters were literally live accompaniments, right, to these like short pieces of cinema. And it just shows you how much like the medium has changed, because we don't even think about that, right? Like the idea that something would be played silently, right? Or that this thing isn't like all encompassing. Basically, like the idea that Disney products, as I was kind of saying earlier, like aren't just viewed on your couch in front of a TV. The fact that you would even go to a theater, the fact that you would even own any of these fucking VHS tapes now is like kind of outside of the way that we process them. Cause we just watch these things fucking like back to back to back. And about like the propaganda of Disney as like a like an art form, and then maybe its vapidity, right? It is so just formulaic now. I think, and to be honest, right? Like, I've seen some of the new like Disney animated 3D animations, obviously, right? Like, they're fine, right? Like, Frozen has a lot of very good musical numbers. Anybody with a kid or the babysits a kid in the past, what is it, 6-7 years? Yeah. They know a couple of the Frozen ones because you've watched it, right? And like, they're good. It's just I don't know if I'm being like a grumpy old man. It does actually feel like they lack some soul, right? Because the structure of the plots are formulaic. The runtime is the same. Like the color, I feel like gradients are like kind of to where like if I walk into the room, it takes me a second to figure out which one we're watching.
Well, this is like this is the same sort of veering into, you know, this is why I say like Disney IP, because it's not movies, it's IP. So you see that veering of every all of the angling when they're creating this content. It's not a movie, it's content. Is this design, we can't make as many fucking little Elsa dresses out of this. Like I saw like a early design for that movie, and they were so beautiful and they were so interesting.
Oh yeah.
And then they turned them into like slop because they were like, well, we can't fucking manufacture that. Like, oh, we need to make a whole bunch of little dresses, you know, like. And I just get the vibe that in the same way that like we as children were exposed to just like reams of product oriented programming, that's what they're doing.
That's something that Disney is like kind of a master of, as opposed to say like, oh my gosh, I don't know the rival company that was basically funding all the Don Bluth movies. So like Secret of Nim, Rockadoodle. Yeah.
Oh wait.
Those are raw. Because, you know, those are scary and they're raw.
They did Brave Little Toaster, which is
Brave Little Toaster. That
movie. So whoa, when I was a kid, talk about the encounter with fear.
Yeah.
And that really primal experience that you don't understand, like when the fucking air conditioner has a breakdown at the beginning of that movie. I still can feel the way that I felt confused, frightened. What is going on? There's something in the world that is beyond my understanding.
It's just called Bluth Studios.
Bluth Studios. Yeah.
It's all of them Bluth Studios.
Disney has always been good at what you're just saying of the like, well, we can't really like mass produce this for a Halloween costume. We can't really make this as a toy that's easily accessible. This is something that the big IPs that Disney has been acquiring, Star Wars, Marvel, all these content, these creative decisions are guided by what's going to sell fucking toys. And Marvel has always been this way, even before they started making movies, which was, all right, we got to make these characters, this series, we're going to put some money into it because we know that we can sell action figures. And when the MCU started kicking off, so much of it was about what's going to actually sell action figures. That's why they tried to make a Black Panther movie for a really long time, and it wasn't until Disney acquired it that they could actually make it, because Disney had the data to be like, yeah, this is going to sell. Like, we... Barack Obama was in the White House. Like, this is going to sell. I mean, sorry to make it so cynical, but that's what
that is what it is.
That's what they were thinking.
They did not make Black Panther because they suddenly awakened to the need for a culture to be enriched by multiple narratives. They did not have a come to Jesus moment. They were like, oh, we can finally make some fucking money.
They saw the cost benefit analysis finally hit that sweet spot where they're like, let's do it. Now's the time.
This is what pisses me off too about this fucking shit, is that like genuinely decades, like almost a century of incredibly hard, grueling academic fucking work, organizing on the ground level up, all of this incredibly important fucking organizing, like cultural, like momentum to move the needle one inch. And then Disney's like, oh, it's finally profitable to make a movie about Black people. And they do it. And everyone's like, yay. And it just makes me so mad because they are, they occupy such an outsized part of the entire media landscape. This is books, every single way that you can reach a person, they have their hands in. And it just is crowding out so much variety, so much beauty.
And it's totalizing, by the way, on purpose, right? Because I think especially nowadays you can tell, but I keep going back to Disney movies because I know the animated movie like history kind of pretty well. But there are ups and downs, right? Like the tin age, right, of like the 70s and 80s with your, you know, Robin Hood, right? Which is, by the way, like these are not particularly well animated either. Robin Hood, I think Aristocats is in there too.
They had the voice acting though. That was a real good time.
Had very good audio, right? Typically. By the way, Brave Little Toaster was Hyperion. It was one of the only not Don Bluth ones. I fucked that up. But
still.
But like the fact is, like when it's in that compendium, right? And when it's either like on your VHS shelf, just like taking up the whole shelf, or it's Disney Plus and it's just massive, massive troves of media.
Oh, yeah.
Like soul. Through the quality, the Disney brand is a kind of totalizing experience, where there is the Disney compendium of media, of shit, of fucking entertainment as a product, including right physically this thing that you can go to, and there's everything else, right? There is Disney, there's Disney World, right? If you stretch this analogy, and then there's any other theme park or whatever you could go to, and it is, at least, right, if you believe the marketing, the kind of creme de la creme. And once you're in there, you don't really want to look outside of there. And I think like that is kind of what has been fascinating about these like walled gardens becoming so kind of gray inside, about them just kind of becoming so blah, is that to build that architecture, they had to build a massive fucking company. And that massive company has to be safe. Right. Like they cannot move before, right, like the social readiness to do something that even a corporation like Disney would deem woke. Right. The water's got to be nice and warm for them to do anything.
Yeah. Disney does not take risks. Yeah. Right.
And they still don't make anybody happy. They still aren't pleasing anybody. Right. Like, I think that there is a little bit of a sense to me like that. Also, Disney maybe. They do please a lot of people, actually. There is a very like lukewarm, bathwater-ish sort of environment where like all of your maybe immediate needs can be filled. The vacuousness can be filled with this sort of created like veneer of togetherness. Like you can buy your little thing. You can dress up in your little outfit. Like I think there is some deeper like hollowness in like our ability to find meaning in culture outside of like massive IPs. But like, yeah, I just think that there's a vacuousness inherent to it because they're not interested in what you're getting out of it in terms of really anything beyond you being a fan of theirs. They just want you to be a fan of theirs. And I think there's like a sort of insidiousness to the way that I feel like Disney, because it occupies such a huge part of the landscape, they're like, we're going to tell a story about like Asian, like, you know, people. We're going to tell a story about Black people. We're going to tell a story about Hispanic people. Like, what about the stories that they already are telling? Like,
yeah, I mean, I
maybe
just find it so gross too.
Maybe like, don't like tell it, Mulan. Like, maybe I should just feed the fucking story of Mulan myself. You know what I mean? I'm embarrassing myself because I'm not, but like, I've been exposed to like literary and like children's oriented like traditions outside of the US. And like, I used to live in Turkey and there's a guy called Nasreddin Hoca and he's like a fool wise man. And he has like a ton of really funny, really relatable, sometimes silly, sometimes informative story. He's like a staple, or at least was when I lived there. And it's like, they're not going to make a fucking movie about an old bearded guy who rides a donkey backwards. That's a cultural specificity. I'm going to buy a book.
It's Disney good. Would never make that.
It kind of sounds like Mr. Bean.
It's not quite as goofy. Like, they'll be like,
Mr. Bean rules.
They're little moral tales as well. It's just he has like a whole book of little anecdotes. It's like, you know, whoever Nasreddin Hoca was, it's not one guy. It's like Aesop. They're like, these are all little tales. But like, I just feel like, you know, there's so much else out there and we just don't have the opportunity to even encounter it because you cannot literally turn in any direction without seeing this IP. And I just think it's really just corrosive and I find it really gross. Like, I don't want to be the conduit through which my child is being trained as like a good little consumer. And like, I'm not going to be able to control that after a certain point, you know?
By the way,
I can't wait for Avatar Fire and Ash personally.
Oh,
I love the
new Airbender. New Airbender.
No, get the fuck. About like Disney inclusivity too. Like, it is so clearly just like box checking. It's like, and then we have the a Pacific Islander movie, and we have the Asian movie, and we have the. It's just like if I was in a group and they're like, we're gonna have a Polish movie, and I'm like, please don't, like, just don't add us to like the
what would the Polish like, movie be,
something extremely bad, I promise. It would be covering for somebody and you're like, oh my god. they killed how many Belarusians?
Yeah, like I think they did make that. It was called Oliver and Company. It's about a bunch of animals who steal and live on the streets.
Okay,
a bunch of dolls.
I needed to look up this movie because I thought it was Polish, but it's actually Hungarian, because I was like, oh, you must have some really sick like equine lore that you could draw from
The Witcher.
But no, I was thinking people. Of Son of the White Mare, but that's a Hungarian.
Oh, Feherlofia?
Feherlofia.
Yeah, I love Feherlofia.
It's
that's
so
a great
good
movie.
It's and it's beautiful.
Oh yeah, you didn't know I know about Hungarian culture, did you, bitch?
I don't know shit about fucking Hungarians.
Well, you better watch Feherlofia then.
You know that's like two countries over. We don't have a border with Hungary.
Okay, first of all, bitch, they're not very big. Two countries over is such a relative term to say. Like, okay, Luxembourg is two countries over from fucking like Holland or whatever. Like, that doesn't mean shit.
Yeah, you think I haven't been to the Mississippi?
You're in a cultural zone.
Those idiots can barely read. I'm not going to fucking learn about their culture.
Oh, wait, this is my favorite. I love Slavic enmity. Please tell me how stupid the other Slavs are.
No, I don't
Slavic.
Know.
I'm sorry. That's
they are. They are our historical friend. Did I ever tell you that thing that like there's a little rhyme that you can say, and if they know the rhyme, you'll like buy each other a beer.
What is
between
it?
Poles and Hungarians specifically? Polak węgier bratanki do szabli do szklanki. It's like an old like knight thing from probably something we did to like murder Ottomans or something. We like got together, we did a campaign, and they liked each other so much that we made up this little thing from like, I don't know, 3-4 centuries ago, and you can still do it. If you meet a Hungarian guy, you can do the little thing and they'll talk back to you in their, you know, babble language. And you're instant friends. It's cool.
Wait, is that what Applecore Baltimore used to be? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Applecore Baltimore.
Who's your friend?
Me.
What is that from? Is that
maybe I thought on the episode of Johnny Bravo where he met Scooby Doo and
yeah.
Gang.
Oh, I saw it on a Looney Tunes episode involving a whole dog all the way to China. So there was a little bit of an accent racist joke in that cartoon. But I don't think that has anything to do with the original saying.
Yeah, we got to find that one out. Listeners, if you know, go ahead and send us an email or join our Discord.
I want to also say something to, like, you know,
I think that the far right wing, like propagandistic children's books, are doing a disservice by being so pat. Like, they shouldn't, they're not going to listen to this podcast, but like, they would do a lot better if they like retold fucking Wagner stories. You know what I mean? Like, they are not doing a good job of
all the time. We tell them all the time. Every episode.
Okay, this is something that I actually have been thinking about. Is so on your point here, why aren't the right leaning into American folktales, such as like your Paul Bunyan, your Pecos Bill, oh my God, John Henry. I mean, I know why they're not talking about John Henry, but
it's boring, man. Shit's fucking boring. Well, no, they could.
Why not Johnny Appleseed? Like, why aren't they leaning into this?
The right and even the far right love to have their little like token guys. So if they had a thing about like a big strong black guy working on the railroad for the white man, right? Like, they might like that. Right, they'd be like, yeah, he's one of the good ones, right? He worked so hard, he died.
I think that there is a certain lack of connection historically between these people who have this like idealized version of like America's colonial history. They are so stuck on the revolution that they like really forget that other shit happened before. There was shit after, like. There was just a lot of folk shit going on. Like, as far as Christianity goes, like the way we've expressed it, it really was a lot folkier even back in the colonial period, right? Like, we were doing a lot of folk traditions that are now like very much like, oh, if you're a certain kind of Christian, that's witchcraft, that's witchcraft. But like, those are folk beliefs. Johnny Appleseed is a little bit of a like mischievous sprite kind of guy. He's like a little magical, you know, Paul. But they like the eagle. They like the founding. They like concrete shit. They lack imagination. They lack imagination because that's why they're literalists. That's why they cannot conceive of a fucking document like the Constitution being anything but the literal fucking words on the paper, because they are that like closed off. They are so unimaginative.
They want to tell the same story over and over. I mean, like
they want everything to fit.
It's not just that there's a status quo, right? Like, the power is to hearken back to whatever they imagine the status quo is, and that cannot change. It's not that any of this shit's real, right? Like I think post, but now we're really like getting somewhere, but like post-fascism, right? Like, there is just a solid foundation for a kind of modernity, and it does not matter, right? Like postmodernism, right? Like, modernism and then postmodernism broke the necessity for any of that shit to be real. Right. So you watch these like Connor and I watch a lot of this like right wing, you know, like I guess like slop documentary content.
Yeah.
And none of these people are historians in the way that you would know a historian, to where they're actually diving into this and trying to perceive these historical figures in a way that is like
they're theologians in
attemptedly neutral. Yeah. Exactly. They're theologians of the American religion.
But that's why that it's just so confusing to me, because it's very, maybe it's not that clear. Maybe this is just my crazy crackpot conspiracy theory, but it does seem like this second Trump administration wants to have a control of the culture war, yes, akin to like Xi Jinping's administration, or his rule, his regime, whatever you want to call it. And I look at Chinese media, and there's like there's like hundreds of adaptations of the old Chinese stories. Like, how many Romance of the Three Kingdoms stories are being retold? There's so many Wuxia movies and TV shows made about these folktales.
Their shit is actually old, is one of the really useful parts about the Chinese, is their shit is really old and ours just isn't.
I just don't know why they're not leaning more. I mean, Angel Studios is putting out Young Washington, so a show about young George Washington. So maybe we're going to get that. But it's always been weird to me, like, why don't we have that? Why doesn't the right just like, we've got five stories that we've been telling over and over and over and over and over? Because we through this show, we have seen that the right does have new stories to tell. And sometimes it's like Gran Torino. Sometimes it's about two cops that are like, yeah, we got to have body cams now. Like, what was that? Dragged across asphalt, dragged on concrete.
Dragged across concrete.
Yeah. Like, we've seen these new conservative stories. I have just been scratching my head as to why we don't see them
Connor, tales. Those are commercial failures. That's the problem, right? Like, by the way, like, a lot of that shit they already have done. All of the thing that you're talking about, like, what are the Western folk tales? Disney already fucking ate them all. They already did them all.
I guess, right.
Like, an interesting thing is The Little Mermaid. Hans Christian Andersen would be fucking horrified to see what Disney did with The Little Mermaid.
It did not end like that. She did not have a good ending.
Lewis Carroll would be horrified to see what they did with, like, watch Alice in Wonderland and see how it's not that it's woke, right? But see how modern it is. See how modernly it treats the characters and colors, and it's not to the book, the style, right? But now that thing that was new and flashy and interesting and why it became a brand, right, is old now. So the old Little Mermaid, I mean, old, it's from fucking 89 or something, right? And from the 52, I think, maybe was Alice in Wonderland, something like that, maybe 48. That to us is tradition, right? Mm-hmm. It's these fucking consumer products that are just stuck in our brain now, and they're like, what if we did a live action version with a black girl and everybody loses their fucking minds?
We get so mad. For what? For what?
The movie's only like 35 years old. We don't have traditions, right?
It's occurring to me now that the movies that I cited, Dragged Across Concrete and Gran Torino, they do have something in common, which is just like theme, this vibe of, this is not my beautiful house. This is not my beautiful wife. Like, what happened?
The dead world.
Yeah. It's like the, what's that meme you see? The country you grew up in no longer exists. Or
God, that one where it's like, you're not six anymore. Like,
By the way, I literally, that one of the first times I saw that it actually did make me feel kind of sad. Cause it was like cartoons. And I was like, oh, the 90s, plastic garbage and like a Happy Meal, right? Like, I did have a thought. I was like, oh, yeah, nostalgia is fun.
The version I saw was specifically about the Twin Towers. Like, it just specifically was a photo of the Twin Towers when they were still up. And I was like, yeah, that they did come
down.
That
must have been made by someone that didn't experience 9/11.
Well,
like, 100%.
I also think it's like, okay, like, I'm not a child anymore. But also, like, the world in which we thought, you know, like the end of history, that world is dead. Yeah, that world is where dead. We got to in a privileged sense. And I don't know, maybe less so you, actually. Honestly.
The optimism of the 90s is dead for sure.
We did live in a time when we really believed that, like, we fucking nailed it. And that's just showing on our part, at least my part culturally, like, I was living in a very different world than the majority of everybody else at that time, right? Like, that is just like, we don't have that many stories. You know who is actually, though, really good at American mythology? And I hate to hand it to him.
Who?
The Mormons.
Oh.
Crushing it.
Hey.
They are coming up with shit I have never even heard of before. They are augmenting American history in ways hitherto unknown. They are really going out there on limbs that are very creative. I do not agree with their religion. I do not approve of what they do at all. But they gotta say, their revisionism, really high quality creative fucking work.
And to be frank,
that's a good
point.
American Christian religion, period.
Oh, for sure.
And like, creativity is baked into it, of just like family talent shows and things like that. This is a pro Mormon podcast. We're not a Mormon podcast, but we are pro Mormon.
We are both quiverful guys. Connor's just a little late on the.
Oh.
We're fucking. I'm trying to have a lot of kids.
Alex,
that's
sorry.
Not true. That's
you're
not
a
true.
Little behind too, honestly.
Oh,
only two.
It's so
that's not
only
true. I am quiverful. I have 12 Gundam models right over there.
He's very frightened all the time.
I have a Steam
Deck. Getting another dog.
Xbox, a Switch 2, a PlayStation 5, a Playdate. I have all of them.
You're the soy man, dude. It's awesome.
He fucked his wife to get every one of those.
Sick. Let's go based at the point. The viewer cannot see it, but Connor and Maria on the same camera are doing the pointing backwards meme from the chicken nugget. I can't remember what it originally
was. It
like
was the Beyond
soy
meme.
Nugget or
it was the Beyond
literally
meme nuggets,
a soy
yeah.
nugget.
Oh, it was. Oh
my God.
Anyway, very funny image, very funny meme, even though.
Look, do you have anything?
I have one more thing I wanted to say.
All right.
I just really want to loop super quick back, because you were saying something interesting about, like, the current administration having a very strong desire to control culture and, like, determine what is good and bad culture, and how you were sort of likened it, or how they were like, oh, like, we're not like China, and China, they're censor, 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 censor. And it's very much to me, you're telling on yourself and trying to deflect, because China's not doing what you're doing. You know who is doing? You know who did do what you fucking did? Literally, and it's not hyperbole, the Nazis. Degenerate art was a huge part of their whole fucking cultural. They redefined culture. Like, imagine, I think it was Goebbels, throwing an art show. This is actually where they kind of probably exceed the Trump administration. I don't think the Trump administration has the balls to throw a degenerate art show and collect all the
data.
The very best fucking artist.
To murder all those people.
The
yeah.
best artist probably saying the most important shit and say, here's an art show of all the shit that's fucking bad that we don't like. That is what they are doing. It's literally like, I don't know. It's not, they're not literally there, but they're just so many parallels. And the cultural consistency, the moralism, all this conservative cultural output for children is frightening because it bears those hallmarks of consistency, lack of imagination, indoctrination, and like absolutely no room for anything other than compliance.
I think we've said on this podcast before that it's a fool's errand or a fool's game to like keep calling them Nazis. Like they're not. That's a political party. They're not Nazis. However, they're pretty close to each other on that political spectrum grid.
They're authoritarian, like, you know, state capitalists, like they're cronies. They are like willfully craven and stupid. Like, you know, that's the other thing too. It's like this increased prominence of rewarding like stupidity, violence, meanness. Like, oh, I got a lot of things to do and a lot of communists to offend. What the fuck? Well, you're no, really mean,
you're misreading. Like the cruelty is the point, right? It's not just a signaling mechanism. It is a reward, right? This is what these people view as.
You get to be
we
unleashed.
Get to do this. We won, and our reward is your pain, right? And they do. The ones that are the sickest do actively enjoy it, right?
Oh,
in a way that's pretty horrifying.
Well, I just think
hearing,
about-
I have a family member who said that exact same shit after Trump won the first time. As a way to like get in my fucking face.
All those people that are posting like I voted for this, right? They're signaling to you, I like this. I want you to know this is my reward for winning. This is what winners get, right? Yeah. It's pretty vile, but like I don't know.
I think the ultimate point about the conversation, just to like bring it back to like. Yeah. Children's media and what makes it good or bad. Like, I think, you know, one example I love is the story of Ferdinand the Bull, which again, I think was made into a fucking Disney movie or something. The book itself.
DreamWorks, but yeah.
My bad. DreamWorks is, you know, better. But like Ferdinand the Bull is a story about pacifism and it wasn't about anything else, but it was set in Spain and it came out in 1936. And so now it's about the sad Spanish Civil War. Do you know, like it took on a political valence because the story resonated powerfully with people in these different ways, right? So some people, it was like, this is an attack on, let's say, like people don't like that story about a bull who doesn't want to fight because they say it's woke. You know,
oh, interesting. That's fascinating. There's no way they would call that woke. So to illustrate the point about the totalizing nature of Disney, I did not know that was a book. I know of Ferdinand the Bull, the 30s era Disney short animated episode, which is, by the way, wonderful. You should go see it. You should watch it on your Disney Plus subscription or steal it because it's visually beautiful. I literally didn't know it was based on a book.
And honestly, get the book because it's beautiful. The drawings are beautiful. That's another thing. Books are so amazing and they don't have to be about something, but if they're beautiful, like, oh my God, being surrounded by beautiful and varied things, being outdoors, indoors, museums, whatever, like just expose children to what beauty is. Let them figure out the rest of it. Let them have questions. Let them be a little uncomfortable and scared. Like it's worse for me to imagine my son feeling that than it actually probably feels for him. Do you know?
Yeah.
Like I have to be uncomfortable in order for him to grow into the kind of person who can be uncomfortable.
I think we are entering like on a meta level, Maria, like this is going to be an interesting generation because streaming and the death of television essentially has broken a period of probably three generations, I would count, of actual kind of totalized American culture that we shared and viewed mostly together. Yeah. Right?
Right.
Because the thing that I will end on is, if your kid's going to watch TV, right, you're going to be somewhat selective. You're not going to let them watch garbage. I'm not going to let my kid watch the Tuttle Twins, right? Sorry. I don't know. If my wife insists, because I think she actually has kind of a penchant for Veggie Tales, I'll check it out. We'll see if it sucks or not.
You can
actually just decide what your kid wants and you can show them stuff, right? Like I can show the easiest thing is I think I turned out okay, right? And I watch these cartoons, and I like those cartoons. So you can watch fucking, you know, Ed, Edd n Eddy and Rugrats, I guess, and like whatever the fuck I grew up with. And like, and it's, or instead of that nihilism, you can look at the CalArts thing that we talk about, right? Adventure Time and Steven Universe and Regular Show and like all those other, like, does that one count?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's kind of in there. That animation style.
Which, in that era. Yeah.
Which, by the way, that was made by our generation. I think it's a whole lot more creative in a different way, right? And like very hopeful, like actually imagining kind of different worlds instead of mostly people dead enders in this world in America, you know. You can pick, right? And and I don't know if that's better or worse, right? I don't know if it's better to just turn your kids loose on the fucking TV the way the Gen Xers and probably we were, right? Or whether or not, you know, we feel the need and we should have the kind of weight on our shoulders of having to decide, you know, like what the media diets of our children are. I don't really want to fucking have to do that, but
well, you won't. I guess I'm half to. The window is going to close really rapidly. Like all this conversation is all in like a really time limited bubble, right? Like, what am I interested in giving to my child in this time when I do for just a short?
Yeah, once my kid's 10, he's fucked or not, right? Like he's screwed.
Yeah. I mean, he will see what he's going to see, you know? Yeah. I just feel like, especially with the nihilism, the other thing really that's so important about this conversation is like, you know, we have a lot to think about and to choose and to curate when we're talking about media, but it's not all of it because we are living our lives. And so with the nihilism, you know, it's so fucking dark and it's so profound and it's so much deeper now that I have a kid than I ever knew it could be. The only thing that I can think of to offer him is to live in a way that is connected. I have to live my principles as well as read him books about them. Like I can read him Ferdinand the Bull. I can read him the Tuttle Twins. But if I'm living in a way that he gets to be in community where he gets to see like not only is like life beautiful, but the value of life is inestimable. What am I giving to others? Who am I to others? How am I in community? Like whatever I'm doing in my life, I am now doing with a new awareness because it's his life. And I want him to know, I didn't bring you into this planet to make you feel the way that I feel. I brought you into this planet because I wanted to know you. And I want you to know it. And this is what you get. And this is like one of the beautiful, horrible, heartbreaking tragedies, the existential like poetry of fucking being alive, that it's the most painful thing. And it is the only thing, and therefore it has to be the only beautiful thing, right? For a lack of other input. That's where I'm trying to be with it. And I have to show him, like, these are options. You don't just have to be like this. You can also be like this.
And by the way, I think both of us have illustrated something where neither of us in this entire conversation have mentioned, like, I'm setting my kid up for success. Had you noticed how like neither of us have like broached that at all? That to me is like half the fucking battle. Like
that's a lot of pressure on me. Well, right. What do we want? What do you really want?
I don't want to frame it that way. That's for fucking sure.
I want, what does success look like? What do you want?
I don't know. For them to experience the world's life. Gonna end. Don't fucking worry about it, man. Just
but
roll.
That's like billions of years from now.
Do your homework. I mean, do your homework, right? Like I'm going to, you know, I'm going to be mad at you if you don't do your homework, but otherwise, it's fine.
Do your homework, then you can watch Sonic the Hedgehog AI videos.
Yes.
I have something to add to this because I've spoken to you both individually about like the fear that y'all have over no matter how good of a job I do with raising my kid, what if they still end up like a piece of shit? What if they still end up like there's something that I don't know that they're exposing themselves to that just like completely warps them?
What if I'm feeding my kid a bunch of lead right now? Like, I hope I'm not.
You can control that.
The reason I bring this up.
No,
is,
you can't. You don't know what's in those bottles. You have no idea what's in that shit, girl. Yeah,
never mind.
The reason I bring this up is I think that. It's worth mentioning on the rare occasion that we have Maria on this podcast, actually, is that Alec and I used to be big right-wing pieces of shit. And it was through Maria who helped steer both of us towards a more diverse and informed leftism. And I think that came from the emphasis, like my parents did emphasize conservative values, but they also emphasized community and talking to your neighbor, being able to break bread with someone, drink with someone. And it was that sense of community that did open my eyes to a greater empathy and like being able to connect with someone. And so like I'm seeing the Trump social media strategy, and it is borrowing heavily from the irony of the Obama era left and the first Trump administration left. Like, it is deeply ironic, and it is appealing to the Gen Z online ethos of these voters, these young voters or potential young voters in 2 to 4 years don't have empathy yet. They have yet to develop that part of their brain. And it does give me hope for a lot of future generations of, dude, if you can just sit and talk to somebody that you don't know, that you may not agree with, yeah, you're eventually, like, I mean, it took time for me and Alec, I would say, but eventually you're going to come around to at least seeing how someone else feels, and then you'll walk away from that "we've got communists to offend" kind of mentality.
By the way, I don't know that I was a right-wing piece of shit. I think I was kind of just an unaligned centrist kind of
Alec, we were
the guy from college.
You were an edgelord. Was your angle. You were edgy.
We were the founders of the Students for Ron Paul chapter at our school.
Yeah, but that's libertarian.
It's actually, I know, that's actually worse. It's actually worse.
We've told this story before. We're a bunch of potheads.
For the era?
showed up, and we were like, don't you guys want to talk about economic policy? What's wrong?
Yeah, I mean, it was... It was the Bush era. Like, I don't know if, I don't think libertarians
were anti-war.
We were anti-war. I mean, that was like the biggest thing that was happening.
We were still high schoolers in Texas.
Certainly the worst thing that America was doing at the time, bar none. It was just like, we don't like we're killing all these brown people. We should save all that money. It's like, the right reason, but we shouldn't meddle in other people's politics. I mean, I think that was the real thing.
There were horrible fucking monsters. It's just that they were more attuned to the need to like plausible deniability, right? These guys are just like, I literally am fucking going to murder you. Like, and I'm saying it on TV, what are you going to do? You know, so there's that. But like, that was part and parcel of this like post-war neoliberal consensus. Like, it is her job to fucking meddle in the Middle East. And everyone's like, yeah, you're totally right. Like, and it isn't like that. So by comparison, I feel like now I look back at like the neocons, I'm like, those guys were like, pretty polite. not good people, but polite. So
they may have been polite at the time because you had to have good manners. That was that old money, new money bullshit. And now that they're building the fucking octagon in the White House garden, it's just like Lindsey Graham is being a sassy little bitch now.
I guess
I will remind, we are so much more degenerated than we were, right? Like, we are, by the way, like, I know things seem extremely dark right now, but things are degenerating in the United States extremely quickly, right? Yeah. And always be aware that there's a silver lining to that, right? Like, there was no way to challenge the Bush administration at all. None, right? There was no future where either one of the parties were not monolithic over their half of the American electorate, right? And that's not going to be true in the near future. It's becoming not true now. Yeah. And I mean, I'm not saying that this is good because it's going to have a good end. I'm saying, look, things are changing. Right?
The same people who read the Star report with disgust turned a blind eye to grab him by the pussy.
You have to understand, like, Trump within like a 2 month span destroyed infinite American soft power ability, and it will not come back. Right. Yeah. Like, America, if you care about American foreign policy and the mean things we do with other countries, we're not going to be able to do some of those things. We're also not going to be able to do a bunch of good things. Right. But they're also destroying their own power. Right. Yeah. And I mean, what can come after that? Hopefully something good. Right?
I mean, politically, I see it's like we're either going to finally go parliamentary or there will be no more parties at all.
There you go.
I think you can tell where we think that's going.
Listen,
I mean, there could be a reshaping of the parties, and hopefully, right? Like, the best outcome that this has is everybody freaks out, the parties start collapsing, unite around some kind of, you know, social democratic vision, and those guys just run the fucking table for 20 years, right?
Well, I mean,
that's a real possibility.
Yeah,
it's not my ideal where I get to be Stalin, right? I would like to do that. I would like to start pointing at people and, you know,
the Lake Charles
stuff happens, right? We start getting stuff done, is what I'm saying.
Yes, the instead of the Cajun Navy, the Cajun Maoist.
They photoshop your first child out of the photo of you on the boat. Okay. Anyway.
Good. Okay. I have to make an executive decision. We are getting close to that 2 hour mark. So do we have do we have any parting words?
Thank you so much, Maria, for coming on. Sorry about the technical difficulties. Hopefully we've edited them all out.
Well, yeah, I think we have. All right. Maria, thank you again for coming onto the show.
Thank you guys so much for having me. It's been a real pleasure.
We'll be having you soon. And listeners, stay tuned. Alec and I are going to have an announcement coming soon about some big things happening with the show.
Yeah, I think.
Well, yeah. We'll get to that. But all right. Excelsior, Propagandos. And as always, keep your eyes on the skies.
Bye.
Bye.